I am very grateful to be with all of you today. We thank you very much for being here and welcome you to our Sunday festival of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. Special gratitude to His Grace Ram Shraddha Prabhu, my very dear God brother who has been blessing our community for several weeks now. Thank you very much. As he was explaining, he was here in the early 70s, 1970s, at the time of Srila Prabhupada, when there was a great struggle to build the temple of Radharas Bihari. And when it was mostly foreign people who were taking Krishna consciousness seriously. And little by little, people of India were taking Srila Prabhupada's teachings to heart. And Ram Shraddha Prabhu was one of the first to do so. So let us welcome him by loudly chanting. He did seva here in Mumbai for many years and in various places and lived in Europe, Germany for some time. And never always retained that spirit of Srila Prabhupada to receive bhakti and to, through our sadhana, through our satsang, and to share bhakti through our outreach efforts on behalf of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Thank you for your inspirational life. We saw this drama. I heard the drama. I was watching it with my ears of Keshav Kashmiri and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In each pastime of the Lord, there are many lessons. And the more we are sincere in hearing with a submissive and eager heart, the more Krishna reveals to us through his pastimes. Parikshit Maharaj was the perfect example of how to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. He knew he was going to die in 7 days, so he was extremely sincere. And there was really nothing else for him to achieve in life except Krishna. So he was totally focused with concentration. And although he was the king of the world, and he had such fortune and power, he realized that ultimately it was all out of his control. And therefore, he was purely submissive to all the great sages and rishis, and ultimately to Shukadev Goswami. And because he was hearing with such sincerity, such eagerness, and such attention, and such humility, every word that Shukadev Goswami spoke was bringing him closer and closer to the most intimate, loving experience with Krishna. Keshav Kashmiri was the greatest scholar in the world from a material perspective. But Queen Kunti in Srimad Bhagavatam tells us, Janmaishwarya Shruti Shribir Edamana Madapuma, that for powerful disqualifications for pure devotional service are high education, high wealth, high parentage, and high beauty. because these things have the tendency to make us proud. And where there is pride, we cannot, with humility, cry out God's names. And that's where we really make our connection with Krishna. Those who are impoverished, they can understand Krishna. This is Kunti's conclusion. But she's saying this just after her son, Yudhisthira, was coronated as king. Very interesting historical dynamic. Because the Pandavas, Yudhisthira Maharaj, Bhima, Arjuna, Nakula, Sahadev, as well as Draupadi, their queen, they were all actually in poverty from a physical perspective for 12 years while they were exiled in the forest, wandering from place to place. So many places you go in India, they will tell you the Pandavas came here. Yes. Almost anywhere you go in India, there's especially holy places or anywhere near a holy place or any place that people want to be a holy place. There's a shrine, the Pandavas were here. Yes, you've seen. So that means the Pandavas, they were homeless. They were wandering around all over the place. Whether they came to all those places, perhaps. We go to Ekachakra. We know for sure they lived there long before Nityananda Prabhu appeared in this world. And after being more or less homeless, without anything, without any land, without any position, Kurukshetra took place. And by Krishna's grace, Yudhisthira Maharaj was now coronated as the king of the world. And of course, he shared everything with his brothers, just like Arjuna shared Draupadi with all of his brothers, by Kunti Devi's direction. That was Kunti's rule for her brothers. Whatever any of you have, share it with each other. That was the principle. That's what brothers are supposed to do. Share everything with each other. Of course, in this day and age, sometimes brothers like to fight over what the father gave them. But the principle, the spiritual principle, is brothers or sisters share everything with each other. And Srila Prabhupada expected that, because brothers are brothers, but God brothers and God sisters, how they are supposed to share everything with each other. Should share their failure, share their successes. In other words, we're here for each other. That's what a spiritual community is. Now the Pandavas, they were so respectful to Kunti. Anything that happened, share it with your brothers. You know, Arjuna just won Draupadi in a contest, and he said, "Mother, I brought something." And she just said, "Share it with your brothers." Arjuna said, "It's a wife." Anyways, you've all read Mahabharata, so you know what happened after that. So this is to the degree they were there for each other in all circumstances. They didn't always agree. God brothers are not supposed to always agree. Ram Shraddha Prabhu is speaking with realization. He's saying if everyone agrees, it's boring. Sometimes I wish it was a little more boring. But Krishna knows what's best, right? So, circumstances, Yudhisthira Maharaj, sometimes Bhima just wanted to get it, you know, make justice. And Yudhisthira Maharaj would say, no, no, you just be calm, you just stay here. Bhima would, I just want to break his thigh. And Yudhisthira Maharaj, no, sit down. The time will come, the time will come. Bhima was very enthusiastic. When they had Ashwatthama, Bhima saying, kill him. Draupadi saying, no, 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 let him go. And Arjuna didn't know what to do. So there's disagreements. But ultimately, because they're in this mood of sharing with each other, they unite on a higher principle, despite all of their differences. And this was Kunti Devi's spiritual wisdom that she handed to her children. And here, after Yudhisthira and After Yudhisthira and the Pandavas are living in poverty for 12 years, and then 1 year in incognito, and then a big war, now all five of them are factually the kings of the world. Yudhisthira is the king, but as far as he's concerned, all five are king, because they're sharing. And now, when they have the most power, the most wealth, the most influence, the most everything, the most fame, Kunti's paying to Krishna that you are the property of the impoverished, of people who have no wealth, no beauty, no influence, no power. Because she's speaking about our consciousness. Yudhisthira Maharaj was akinchana gocharam. Because as we were explaining this morning in class, he understood Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, that nothing is mine. Everything belongs to Krishna. In this sense, you can be a Kinchana Gocharam and be a billionaire, a millionaire, a struggling middle class, a factory worker, a farmer, a brahmachari, whatever it may be. We can be a Kinchana Gocharam if we just understand that everything belongs to Krishna. I'm not the controller. I'm not the proprietor. I'm not the enjoyer. I'm the servant of the servant of the servant. That is the principle. And that highest realization, which accesses the highest connection to Krishna, is equally available to everyone and anyone, whatever our position, if we are just sincere and eager to serve. So Keshav Kashmiri, he was so powerful because of his knowledge. He was so famous. He was proud. It's very difficult to have material opulences, whatever they may be, and not be proud. One of the opulences, Sat Aishwaryas, that describes Krishna's six opulences, is renunciation. This is quite subtle. One can be proud and totally disqualified from devotional service because of one's renunciation. Real renunciation is to understand and to live by the principles that Krishna is the proprietor, the controller, and the enjoyer. And Jivera Swaropoi Krishna Dar Nityadas. I'm eternally a servant. That's renunciation. That's the perfection. It's a state of consciousness. Coming from you, it is like a... It's like a kirtan. So when he was coming into Navadvip with so many horses and elephants and palanquins and Brahmins chanting his glories, even Nimai Pandit's students, even they were quite affected and mesmerized by it all. Because it's very, very natural to be affected and mesmerized by sensational things going around us. Yes? I remember, I've told the story before, there was a devotee who was at one of our college outreach centers in America, and two college football teams were playing. And they were like really aggressively rivals with each other. And I would go from college to college. So I was neutral because I was going to all the different colleges. So I didn't affiliate myself with anyone in particular. So either I was in West Virginia University, I was in Pittsburgh University. But they were playing each other. And one won. So I talked to this person, called me on the phone, and I asked him, you know, what's happening? He said, oh, the other team won. I said, oh, very good. And he screamed at me. He said, what do you mean by that? How could you possibly say that? I say, you know, you're not even from that place. Why are you so... But just the whole atmosphere of the college was so affected him. So we become affected by sensational propaganda and all around. So Nimai's students were telling him, Keshav Kashmir is here. He knows everything. Goddess Saraswati speaks whenever he opens his mouth. And now he has so many. He has triumphantly conquered every scholar in the world, and now he's come to Navadvip and he's challenging everybody, and everybody's running and hiding because he's so powerful, and there's elephants and there's Brahmins and there's chariots and there's marching bands. Amazing, he's come to Navadvip. They were actually really affected. And Nimai this kind of technology I don't mind. It's pretty simple. Nimai, he said that a person who has good character is like a tree with many fruits. Due to the weight of the fruits, that tree will lower itself to bow to everyone. But a tree that doesn't have good fruits stands up very straight and thinks I'm above everyone. Then Nimai, he said it very casually. He said, Krishna does not allow false pride. In due course of time, he will crush that pride into a fine powder. Whoever you are, whatever you know, whatever you have, it will be crushed into a fine powder. It's just a matter of time. And Krishna is time. Time is his energy. But Nimai was so good. He welcomed, I'm not going to repeat because you saw it in the drama, but eventually Keshav Kashmiri was defeated by Nimai, and Goddess Saraswati told that he is the Supreme Lord whom I have all gotten all my powers that I've given you. You should surrender. And eventually he did. And he became the humble servant of the servant of the servant. Because he understood the very purpose of all the knowledge that he had. Was to live with the character of a Vaishnav. Which is, as we have said, that Krishna's the controller, the proprietor, and the enjoyer. And I'm the servant of the servant of the servant. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave him the way by which he could realize that. Through chanting the holy name. That is called Kripa Siddha, where one attains spiritual perfection by causeless mercy. And when the Supreme Lord incarnates in this world, he gives a lot of Kripa Siddha. We have seen when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was here in this world, that one washerman for Srivas, he just happened to see Lord Chaitanya on the road. And Lord Chaitanya said, chant Hari Hari.
Hari Hari. Hari Hari. Hari Hari.
And he attained the perfection of life. He only said it once and he attained the perfection of life. You've just said it five times. You're on the path of perfection. But that's Kripa Siddha. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went into the jungles of Jharikhanda. And he was seeing cobras and vipers, and he was seeing lions and tigers, and he was seeing deers and squirrels and rabbits and insects and trees. And he was telling them, chant Hari Hari. And they were And they were weeping, and their hairs were standing on end, and they were embracing each other and kissing each other. No, I don't see any of you doing that. So it was instant perfection. That's Kripa Siddha. But when the Lord is in the world, he gives instructions, and he gives a path by which we can attain that same perfection. But when he's not personally seated here doing his incredible miracles of compassion, then that same miracle of compassion comes through following his instruction. And he explained to Rupa Goswami in such a way to reveal to the world how everyone can achieve that spiritual perfection. It's called sadhana siddha. We can become perfect by following and implementing in our life the Lord's instructions. Adosha tatha sadhu sangota bhajana kriya tato nartana vitishyat tato nishta ruchistata. He says at the beginning there's a little faith. From that faith, Krishna reciprocates and brings us in the association of devotees. In that association, we learn bhajana kriya. We learn how to practice devotional service. There are 9 processes of devotional service. Sravana kirtana smarana bandana pada sevana dasyare pujana sakijana atmanivedana. These are the 9 processes, beginning with hearing and chanting and remembering the Lord. And under the guidance of spiritual masters, we actually learn how to follow these 9 processes of devotional service. That's bhajana kriya. And through the process of following these, especially hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord in a spirit of servitude, then anartha nivritti, then the unwanted things of the heart will be removed. And once they're actually removed, there's nishtha, there's firm faith. And by continuing on with the practice of devotional service, hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord in the association of devotees, that firm faith develops into ashakti, deep attachment to Krishna. And then bhava, love, and prema, ecstatic love. The same thing that those monkeys and tigers and deers and snakes achieved in Jharkhand in a second. The same thing that washerman, that Malechai washerman achieved in a second can be achieved in our very lifetime if we sincerely execute devotional service properly. The world is a place where it is said, seek and you shall find. This is from the Bible. If we're seeking deeper devotional service and open our hearts for that purpose, Krishna will give us great messages, even through everyday occurrences. In the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, I believe it is, it tells the story of King Yadu, was it, when he was in the forest and he met that one sage who had so many gurus. Was it 24 gurus? Huh? And Avadhut. And some of his gurus that he learned things from. One was Pingala. Does everyone know what her profession was? Yes. She was a prostitute. Now, usually we're not supposed to learn from prostitutes, but he learned how to attain the perfection of life by watching her frustration and anxiety.
Yes.
Also from a moth flying into fire, he learned what lust does to somebody. He learned from some little birds and a hunter who was killing the birds. So recently, many of us were in Jagannath Puri for a yatra which culminated in Ratha Yatra. If you were there, please raise both of your hands. So Jagannath Puri is one of the holiest of all holy places. It is Purushottam Kshetra. It is the place which is the residence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Jagannath. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he resided there for 24 years. For 6 of those 24 years, he was traveling in and out. The last 18 years, he remained there. and revealed so many beautiful pastimes. So it's a holy place. So one day, when I was chanting my japa, I was looking out at the ocean, and I saw a wonderful lesson. May I share it with you? Nice. That day, the waves were huge. You know how big the waves can be in Jagannath Puri. I've seen many of our brahmacharis, they just kind of sit on the sand. And the waves hit them, but they're really afraid to go in because you don't know what's going to happen. These very powerful waves, they kind of beat you. Yes? So the waves were massive waves, huge waves. Your clapping sounds more like the waves than my imitation. Your laughing sounds even more like. And then I saw a group of little fishermen with their boats who wanted to go fishing that day. It's not, I don't think they wanted to. I think they felt a need to. So, adoshatatata sadhu sangota bhajanakriya. I was kind of seeing a lesson of how to progress in Krishna consciousness through what the fishermen were going through. Adoshata, that means at the beginning is faith. So, at first, they're in the apparently comfortable sandy shore. Yes? There's no waves hitting them. They're just on the shore. But they have faith. They have faith. If they can get out deep enough into the sea, they could catch fish. That's faith. Yes? Otherwise, why leave the shore? Why get beat by those waves? And then they take their boats. Because they have that faith. Sadhu Sangha. That faith actually has come probably from their family members who are fishermen. From their wives who are telling them, go out there and do something. Their children who are hungry, their fathers who've done it before, their grandfathers who've done it before, their great-grandfathers, there's a whole parampara. And they know that they've done it. And then all the other fishermen around them, they're all communities. So it's like it reinforced the faith. And not only that, but from the other fishermen of the present and the past, they actually learn what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to get on their boats and they're supposed to row in a certain way. Yes? They learn this due to what's compared to sadhu sangam. And then there's bhajanakriya. Then there's actually getting on the boat. Getting on the boat and rowing, going forward. Now, as you're doing your bhajanakriya, as you're doing your sadhana, what we find is anartanavritti. so many impurities coming. Yes? And the waves represent obstacles on the path of devotional service. And there are, once you take to the process of sadhana or the practice of bhakti, so many obstacles will naturally come. The obstacles of society. So many society conceptions that just be an enjoyer, and if you want to be religious, just let it be a little formal detail that you do on Sundays. That's what, today's Sunday. Obstacles in the form of the weather, too much rain, too much cold, too much heat. Obstacles that may come from other living beings. They may be our god brothers or god sisters. They may be other Vaishnavas. They may be family members. They may be our boss or our employees or whatever it is. Maybe the government. So many obstacles come. There may be obstacles within our own health. And there are many obstacles in the waves of our anartas. When we're doing our sadhana, in order to live with the character of a Vaishnava and concentrate on hearing and chanting of the Lord's names and doing seva, then lust, sometimes big waves, anger, big waves, envy, greed, I want more and more and more. Envy. Arrogance. The wave of arrogance. The obnoxious craving to have to feel that I'm better than somebody else. It's actually a pitiful condition for the soul to feel that I have to be better than someone else. If we understand at all how great Krishna is, then we're happy with Krishna's greatness. We don't have to be better than anybody. To the extent we think I have to be better than somebody else means we are not experiencing any of the fulfillment of understanding how great Krishna is. Because Krishna actually is greater than everybody else. Yes? And we're all jivas. We're all basically just infinitesimal part and parcels of Krishna. And our happiness is in Krishna's greatness. And when we have no pride and no need to satisfy this false pride, then we become ecstatically, infinitely filled with the happiness of Krishna's greatness, who's Rasa Bihari, who's Gopinath, who's Giridhari, who's Shamsundar, who's Madhava. He's the husband of the goddess of fortune. So these anartas come like waves. And these fishermen, when they first start with their little boats, there's a group of them, they're all together. And they get on their boats and they start rowing. And one wave comes. And they're really, really fighting against it. And they go backwards so much. And then they're going forward. And then another wave goes. And it pushes them back again. And they're struggling, shoving another. And then the boat, they fall off the boat. They're in the water. And somehow or other, another boat, and then another wave comes, and they somehow or other, they're crawling back in the boat, and they get up, and they start paddling again. This is actually what I'm seeing. I'm giving you a replay. Not exaggerating. They get back in the boat, and they're paddling, Bhajana Kriya, they're chanting, they're hearing, they're doing deity worship, they're... They're offering prayers. You're doing seva. You're eating prasad. They're just, they're trying to practice bhakti, and they keep getting pushed back and pushed back and pushed sideways, and then one wave comes and knocks the whole boat over. And the boat goes upside down, and they go under the boat, and I'm just thinking, what happened to them? And then all of a sudden, I see them come out from under the boat. And meanwhile, the boat has gone in every direction. It's twirling around by the waves, and they're all, and they somehow or other, they get out, and now they're almost on the shore again. And they get back in the boat, and Pach and Akriya, they just keep hearing and chanting and remembering and offering puja and praying. And sometimes, I saw this, sometimes the waves are so powerful that they get two boats and boatmen to crash into each other. Yes? And they crash, and I'm just watching, I'm chanting japa. I'm on the shore thinking, my God, this is what I have to do. This is what my job is about, actually. The boats crash into each other and the boatmen crash into each other. And sometimes anarta navriti, that's what happens. It causes the satsang to actually crash into each other. Well, we actually, our anartas cause collision with other devotees. Who in this regard are fishermen. But what do they do? I didn't see them when the waves crashed them into each other. I didn't see them just get back on the shore and start beating each other up. No, I saw that they were like, all right, so we crashed in. You know, it's not your fault. It's not my fault. It's the waves' fault. It's the way the world is. It's going to make us crash. But somehow or other, you know, they just both got on their boats and they started paddling again. And they paddled and they paddled and they struggled and they went under the water and over the water and somehow or other, they made it to the deep sea. Nishta. No waves. Very calm. Shanti. You see, in bhakti, we don't just settle for shanti and peace. Impersonalists, they're happy just with the peace, being in the deep ocean, just like that. But nishta is that state where even whatever happens, because our faith is so deep, we're not disturbed from within or without. And then, once they're there, in that deep part of the sea, which I could see, we could see the sea, then they throw their nets in. And then little fish start coming in the net. And once they start seeing little fish coming into their nets, that's like ruchi. They get a higher taste. They actually get an experience of what they're really there for. And then more and more and more and more fish. And then they bring the net in, and there's so many fish. And when they actually see the fish and bring them on the boat from Ruchi, it's like bhava. They actually attain the fish. And then I'm thinking, and then they have so many fish, and then they sell them, and they get lots of money, and they become wealthy. That's prem. Now, I'm not advocating becoming a fisherman. But let
let me justify this story. The Srimad Bhagavatam doesn't advocate becoming Pingala prostitute. But we can take what we see in this world as an example. That in the path of devotional service, if we want to actually reach our goal, the goal of the fisherman is to become wealthy by catching lots of fish. They have to pay a price. They have to go through their own adoshva-tata-sadhu-sangota-bhajanakriya-tato-nartana-vritishat and then ashakti-bhava-prema. So in our path, you know, at the beginning there's some faith, then there's the sadhu-sangam, the association of devotees, the devotees from the parampara, from the time of Krishna, and those who represent the parampara today. Srila Prabhupada, our founder Acharya, he gave us the wisdom, the knowledge of the essence of all the acharyas of all the paramparas. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy in fullness. And we're all trying to share that with each other. That's sadhu sangha. And we learn the process of these nine processes of bhakti, especially hearing, chanting, remembering. And as we're doing, there will be so many obstacles that will come. But Krishna tells in Gita, Vyabhashayat makabudhir eke hakuru nandana, bahushaka hinantascha budhayo vyabhashayana. Those who are on this path must be resolute in purpose. Their aim must be one. Otherwise, we're many branched. If we can be as determined and resolute in purpose to love Krishna, to please Krishna, to serve Krishna, to achieve love for Krishna, as the fisherman is, to get some fish, then we will attain perfection. That determination, we have to have that determination because there will be so many waves in the form of so many obstacles from within and without, but we keep moving forward. And when we actually attain that raganuga state, that higher state, then everything becomes pleasurable. So if we want something great, we must know that it takes sincerity. And ultimately, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us that the obstacles on our path are actually necessary for us to actually sincerely take shelter of Krishna. To make what apparently is unfavorable, favorable. That is the art of bhakti. And that's what Srila Prabhupada gave us. Whatever may be, even if we have difficulties, even if we slip and fall, even if we fall off the boat, just get back up and keep going. And we need each other to help each other to reach that state. Hari Nam Sankirtan. It's the most powerful and the most merciful blessing in all of creation, that Krishna has come within the sound of his names to help us to cross this ocean of material existence and go deep into Karuna Sindhu, into the ocean of his love and his compassion. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.
Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare
Hare. Is there any questions?
someone could select who to give the microphone to.
Who has the microphone now?
Okay. You can be the selector.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you for a very beautiful lecture. Maharaj, when we are also in our boats trying to get out into the ocean, as per the analogy you gave, we keep facing these waves. These waves keep hitting us. Anarthas keep hitting us. And after some time, we kind of get used to the waves. You know, it's... for some time we fight against them, and you know, we try to fight that, okay, you know, I will not allow this to affect me, and I keep moving forward. After some time we can become a little complacent, or you know, we can become kind of, okay, I think I can't fight these waves anyway, let the boat just move along, you know, and I keep rowing. But it's not with determination I'm rowing forward, it's just that, okay, let me see how it goes. You know, we don't move at the same determination that we have when we are early in Krishna consciousness. So how do we kind of break out of that complacency, that, you know, that relaxation that kind of sets in after some years? We kind of start cruising and not really making an effort to row fast and move forward towards the goal.
Hari Hari. Actually, it's not necessarily as bad as I made it sound. Krishna consciousness is very nice. It's kevala anandakanda. Simply joyful. But if those waves do come, we have to be willing. We have to be willing to have integrity. And in Krishna consciousness, if we have nice association, advanced association, if we have good Krishna conscious friendship, and we are taking shelter of our sadhana in Krishna, then actually, even when the waves do come, it's a happy experience. Because we have such a good cause. Yes? That's why association is so important. In good association, even the highest waves are pleasant to pass through, more or less. Because we're reinforced by the association of others who are supporting us. Yes. But there's something else that I saw in Puri. There's something called an undercurrent. How many of you experienced that? This is a different analogy. Because for a boatman, going into the deep sea is the goal. But for someone who's going to bathe in the sea without a boat, going to the deep sea means death. Yes? So from a swimmer's perspective, the waves come. And then after the waves, an undercurrent that is pulling you underneath. And could cause you to, once you get there, then you can't get back. Yeah, if the undercurrent pulls you back out into the sea, you can't get back. It's very dangerous. Many people drown there. So what is that undercurrent? Let me think of something. The undercurrent is what Bhakti Vinod Thakur explained when there's aparads among Vaishnavas, when there's that unhealthy rivalry that creates
aparads between Vaishnavas. That's like an undercurrent that can finish our devotional service for this lifetime. So we have to be very careful about that, the politics. Politics based on ego or other anarthas that come between us are like an undercurrent that can ruin everything. So we have to be very careful. Does that answer your question? So we should be determined. But Krishna consciousness is a happy experience, even going through it all, if we're doing it properly. It's not a miserable experience. It's a happy experience. If we understand what the goal is and we have the proper people with us and we're doing the right things to get to that goal. Kevala Anandakanda. Prabhupada was giving that lecture that Krishna consciousness is simply joyful. Chanting, dancing, feasting. And one devotee was asking, what about, you know, my mind and my anarthas and the neighbors and so many things going on? And Prabhupada's reply was, it is simply joyful. Chanting, dancing. That was his answer. So we have to remind each other of that. Is there any other questions? Radhe Shyam Prabhu. Jai Jai Shri Radhe. Shyam. Prabhu.
Maharaj, I had a question from the morning Bhagavatam class, Maharaj. But you...
Yes.
Because you didn't have time in the mornings. Thank you for such a wonderful Srimad Bhagavatam class as well as the Sunday Feast lecture today, Maharaj. So many valuable things to learn today. So in the morning class, you were saying that Krishna told the cowherd boys to go and tell the Yajna Brahmana's wives that me and Balaram are around somewhere and don't ask for any prasad, you know, on their own if they give, it's all right. But the cowherd boys, to ensure that the prasad will be given, they asked for prasad, you know. So now Krishna was speaking, keeping in mind the sentiments of the wives, you know. He didn't want to demand anything. But the cowherd boys were more on a practical level. So sometimes there is a tug of war between sentiment and practicality. So I had an example. Your manager asked a particular spiritual master that we are celebrating Rath Yatra in our town and we want some donations. And the spiritual master said, you can approach such and such congregation devotee, maybe he may be able to provide. You know, he is reasonably rich. We can check with him. So he needed about 5 lakhs. So he went to that particular devotee and said, Guru Maharaj has told you to give 5 lakhs. So actually Guru didn't tell him that you should demand 5 lakhs from him. He just said, maybe you can check with him. You know, but his way of checking was not proper. And the congregation devotee had to collect some 3 lakhs loan and give, you know. So in this way, sometimes there is a tug of war between sentiment and practicality. Like another example I heard in the morning, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu being persuaded by devotees to eat more, you know. One advantage Lord Chaitanya has is he is Krishna himself. He can eat any quantity. But sometimes devotees, you know, somebody brings prasad from Vrindavan, somebody brings from Mayapur, somebody brings from Jagannath Puri, and they want to put it in the mouth also, directly.
Tirupati also.
So many devotees spoil their health.
But most commonly they bring from Pune.
Of course, if they allow us to reserve it for the future, it is not a problem. But some devotees persuade that you should eat now. So in this way, we don't want to hurt their sentiment. At the same time, we want to be practical. So Maharaj, my question was, I heard a saying that, you know, we can have our head in the clouds, but we should have our foot in the ground, you know. So when we are faced with such tug of war, I face duality, you know, some kind of dvandva, which one to choose, because either way, it's like, you know, we are between devil and deep sea. So I want to check with you how to get the right direction from within at that time. Yes, Maharaj.
Essentially, in Krishna consciousness, the power of discrimination comes through realization. Of course, everything as far as knowledge comes from hearing, from reading the shastras, from hearing the great souls, by seeing their lives, how they apply it. Great personalities like Srila Prabhupada, they're speaking the shastra purely. And they're also giving an example of how to apply it through his life. But then how we apply it in these different types of circumstances requires realization. You see, the gopas are self-realized souls. They're beyond self-realized souls. They're Krishna's most intimate, loving friends. So they very, very deeply knew the purpose of Krishna. Yes? Krishna knew the Brahmin's wives' hearts. And he didn't tell them to say that Krishna's hungry. He just told them to tell the Brahmin's wife that Krishna's close by. Because he knew that's all they needed to hear to bring all their food without giving them any distress. But the boys really knew Krishna's heart. So they said something beyond what Krishna said because they wanted to really make sure that they said Krishna's hungry. And the Brahmin's wives came and did. So they didn't exactly disobey Krishna because Krishna didn't say, don't say this. He just said what they should say. But they had realization of what would be pleasing to Krishna. Yes? So in the example that you gave, where I don't know who said what, we're just speaking in principle. Where you're saying a spiritual master has asked a disciple to do something and a disciple did way beyond what the spiritual master and created a burden on somebody. The question is, was that pleasing to the spiritual master or not? If it wasn't, then it wasn't really the right thing to do. Yes? The gopas, their realization, they actually knew how to please. If we don't actually have the realization to know before going beyond such an instruction, it's better to inquire and ask. Lord Chaitanya told Lord Nityananda, do not come to Puri next year. Stay in Bengal and preach. And next year, Nityananda Prabhu came to Puri.
And he's glorified for all eternity for doing that. Because he knew Lord Chaitanya's heart. In Lord Chaitanya's heart, he really was yearning for the association of Nityananda. When Nityananda Prabhu Damodar Pandit, Jagadananda Pandit in Mukunda Dutt all volunteered to Lord Chaitanya, "We want to come to South India." And each one of them said, "I will be your personal servant." And Lord Chaitanya started chastising them. Yes? He was saying the faults with each and every one of them. "Nityananda Prabhu, you want to come? You want to be my servant? What kind of servant? You break my danda?" "That's my sire. Give you my..." "I say, please hold my danda." "And then you break it and throw it in a river? That's a servant. I said to you, bring me to Vrindavan, and you bring me the opposite direction to Shantipur? Damodar Pandit, you're my servant. If I do something that you think is not right, then you chastise me? Jagadananda, I'm trying to be a sannyasi, I'm trying to be a little renounced, and you're giving me sense gratification. If I don't accept it, you get angry and fast. Don't even bathe." "And Mukunda, you don't say anything, but when you see me doing tapasya, you just cry. And when I see your suffering, I suffer more." So Lord Chaitanya is apparently, but Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains, he was glorifying them because he understood their heart. So if we actually really know that this is what Srila Prabhupada or the Vaishnavas want, then yes, we can please them by going beyond. But if it's something that's sensitive, that could actually hurt people or impede the preaching due to immaturity, it's better if we inquire. And that takes realization too, when to inquire and how to actually adjust. In Srila Prabhupada, one time Prabhupada was kind of tired and he was resting, and Prabhupada had devotees preparing a special, Prabhupada himself, I think, prepared a special feast for a very, very important person who was coming to 26 Second Avenue to his apartment to see him. And Prabhupada was arranging everything because this person was so very, very important. And, you know, Prabhupada was preparing himself and all the other devotees were preparing and everything was going on. And then Prabhupada went to take rest and the person came a little early. Prabhupada was waiting. He asked, "Where he is?" He said, "Oh, he came, but we told him you're resting, so he left." You remember that story? Prabhupada was extremely disturbed. They could never get the person to come back because the person was offended. He was invited by Prabhupada. He came all the way, and then he was told, "Prabhupada's resting. You have to..." So they did it only to please Srila Prabhupada. But they didn't please him. They displeased him. So it takes some maturity and realization. Does that answer your question? Yes, of course.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, you are very beautifully explaining about Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, Anarthana Vritti, and Nishtha, and different stages. So, I have heard that our advancement in bhakti is generally progressive. You know, it's progressive and it's like cumulative. One lifetime we live somewhere, and then next lifetime we continue from there. And in this way we progress. But sometimes we find in our sadhana practice, in our spiritual life, that our consciousness is way high and practically we are floating in bliss in a very, and then Krishna gives very deep realizations about many things in spiritual life, and on the other hand sometimes we find ourselves on hands and knees down, practically some very base quality being revealed, you know, which probably Krishna does to make us humble, you know. So, and this kind of sinusoidal wave, this kind of ups and downs, you know, in it doesn't seem progressive, because you know, I heard His Grace Dwarakadish Prabhu asking this question some years ago, you know, in one of his classes, Maharaj. But I would like to again learn from you about how Krishna gives sometimes very deep realizations on one particular direction, and in the same life of the same devotee, Krishna can give another realization of something, you know, which brings him down. Like I can tell you one example, Maharaj. We emphasize on certain qualities. Like for example, integrity, truthfulness, honesty, and simplicity, and things like that. But sometimes, if a devotee is found holes in the very same things that he is trying to imbibe, live, and teach others, then it raises a very serious question mark in one devotee's life. Because actually, and in the same manner, every devotee also has different type of experiences like this in their own personal lives. So, why does Krishna give such kind of realizations to a devotee of such base qualities coming on one hand, on the other hand, very deep realizations that Krishna mercifully reveals? Yes.
On the days of low tide, the waves are very less. On the days of high tides, the waves are very high. So the tides change according to this analogy. What Srila Prabhupada taught us is very simple and very practical. We should be steady. Sometimes we feel like we're just on the verge of becoming pure devotees. Just a few more days, and I will hear Krishna's flute. And my gopi form will be revealed. Sometimes we feel like that. Other days we feel like, like we have no devotion at all, and we have no faith at all, and we're just being trampled by all these materialistic, egoistic desires. It's the nature of the mind. Yadyaracharati sreshtas. We should follow in the footsteps of great souls. And what we learn from great souls is their steadiness through every situation. Yato yato nishchalati manas chanchalam ashtaram. That whatever way the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must certainly control it by putting it under the control of the self. And that means just adhering to Srila Prabhupada's orders.
practice, keeping them as our life and soul and remaining steady. Do you know the analogy of the unicorn? Do you know what a unicorn is? Raise your hand if you know what a unicorn is. It's a mythological figure in Western ancient poetry from Europe and the Middle East. A unicorn is a horse with one horn that comes out of the middle of his head, and it's straight. Have you ever seen paintings of unicorns? And the nature of a unicorn is they're totally wild and very destructive. They're untamable, and if you get in their way, they really could cause serious harm to you because they're powerful, powerful horses with a horn in the middle of their head. But when a unicorn comes in contact with a girl who has a young girl who has a pure heart, the unicorn actually becomes completely subdued and puts his head on the lap of the girl and peacefully goes to sleep. But even the greatest warriors cannot combat a unicorn. But a pure-hearted girl is subdued. So the mind is like the unicorn. The only thing that really could subdue the mind ultimately is param drishtva nivartate, is experiencing a higher taste. The mind is extremely restless, and sometimes the mind is feeling elated by our great spiritual progress, and sometimes the mind is feeling incredibly depressed by our lack of Krishna consciousness. So either way, we just carry on chanting our 16 rounds every day as sincerely as possible. Carry on coming to the Mangalarti, doing our puja at home. Carry on by following these four regulative principles. Carry on by doing our seva, whatever it may be. Whatever the mind is doing, the unicorn mind is doing, just keep it on the lap of Krishna. Sometimes we're up, sometimes we're down. Sometimes the mind is like a monkey. Sometimes the mind seems like Hanuman. And sometimes the mind seems like one of these monkeys in Vrindavan. It's coming to attack you. Either way, we just carry on with our, we just remain steady. That was Srila Prabhupada's formula. Just hear Srimad Bhagavatam every day. Read his books every day. Hear his lectures every day. Chant the holy names every day. Don't commit offenses. Carry on with whatever particular service you may have. Live with good character. Just whether you're up or whether you're down. Happiness, distress, honor, dishonor, pleasure, pain, success, failure, advanced, depressed. Whatever may be happening, just be steady. That's the way we take shelter. It's very, very practical. And the more we actually learn to be steady in our life, we keep moving forward, whatever kind of waves may come. And sadhu sangam. Rupa Goswami explains, without proper sadhu sangam, we can't really follow these principles. We need good association to keep us steady. And in order to actually advance in good association, we have to be quite humble. Because sometimes the lessons we learn are not what the mind or the ego want to hear. But that's part of sadhu sangam. that answer your question? Actually or partially? Huh? Say it in the microphone, please.
Thank you, Maharaj. Yes, Maharaj.
From your clap, it sounds like you're eager for prasad. So, should we end here? We'll have one more question, then we will have kirtan. Who do you select? Is there any ladies who have a question? You can. You do.
Hari Bol. Maharaj somehow brought to the beautiful end there about association of Vaishnavas, devotees. So there's a song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Kalyana Kalpataru. I don't know if you all know about this song, but I can read the translation. Kripa karo Vaishnava Thakur, sambandha janiye, bhajite bhajite abhimano haotu. O Vaishnava Thakur, please give me your mercy, knowledge of my relationship with Bhagavan, and the ability to do bhajan, casting arrogance far away. Amito Vaishnava ye buddhi hoilo, amani na hoibe ami. Pratisthasa asi hridaya dushibe hoibo niraya gami. If I think I'm a Vaishnava, then I will never become humble. My heart will become contaminated with the hope of receiving honor from others, and I will surely go to hell. Tumara kinkora apane janibo guru abhimana tyaji. Tumara uchista padajala renu sada nishkapate baji. Give me the mercy that I can renounce the false conception of my being guru and can be your servant. Let me sincerely honor your eminence and your foot dust and foot bath water. Nija shreshtha jani utista de dhane hoiba abhiman bhar taya shishyatava takya sarvada na loibe puja kar. By thinking myself very advanced and giving my eminence to others, I will be burdened with the weight of false pride. Let me always identify as your disciple and not accept worship or praise from others. Amani manada hoilo kirtana adhikaru dibe tumi. Tumara charane nishkapate ami kandiye lutipa bhumi. If I can renounce the desire for honor for myself and can offer respect to others, you will bless me with the ability to perform kirtan purely. Weeping and rolling on the ground, I sincerely submit myself at your lotus feet.
Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. We will have kirtan. In regard to that analogy, if in good association we have good faith, then whatever waves come, it is a joyful experience to keep moving forward, deeper and deeper in the ocean of bhakti.